Good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm here in the studio with the on-time Patty Fink.
Good morning,
how are you? Good, and it's a lovely day outside. It is snowing if you haven't been outside. We have about 3 feet of snow, and it's about 70 degrees out. I always like to give a wrong weather report.
All of it's lies.
And you know me, I like to give wrong weather reports so that people have to get up like I did, and they can just look out the window themselves. So you know not to rely on me for the weather, but you can rely on us for interesting and odd guests. Welcome, Giancarlo.
Hello, David.
Our guest today is Giancarlo Mossi. He is a, well, what are you? You're affiliated with Youth First Texas, and you're putting together a Gay-Straight Alliance Summit, right?
Right.
And the summit is when?
Summit will be February 4th.
At?
It'll be from 10 till 2 p.m., I believe, in the afternoon.
At Youth First Texas?
At Youth First Texas.
And which is located on Harry Hines, across from the Market Center Green Line stop. And what you're doing is you're trying to get students from all of the different Gay-Straight Alliances, or GSAs as they're called, from high schools across North Texas to come together and meet
other GSAs and other youth who are like them, and, you know, just youth who are interested in pursuing something greater, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Okay, tell us what a GSA is.
Basically, a GSA is a safe place within a school, which is considered a club or a group or some sort of recreational activity outside of school. And besides just providing a safe space, it's an opportunity to, you know, be either recreational time or a more advocate, you know, promoting LGBT rights within schools, or even just a general social group where you can just go and hang out and, you know, support each other. Exactly.
And basically they provide a safe space. What do you mean by a safe space? What's going on in schools that any student needs a safe space as opposed to what I call a safe space, which is school?
Well, I would say the first thing would be the constant slurs. Some schools are worse at it, others are better at it, but consistent slurs of very discriminative, anti-gay, general, you know, just like, you know, I don't want mm-hmm. to say any of them, but and bullying, you know, maybe they're getting bullied after school or somewhere else, and, you know, it's a good place to go if you just got out of class and you want to avoid your typical bullying. Instead of getting beat up, you can go and hang out somewhere else, I suppose. But you know, just general.
Well, or some of you, if you're staying after school together, you have a group and you're going home together, and a group of five kids is less likely to be bullied than one person who's off on his own.
Exactly.
Because we know several bad cases. There was one kid on a school bus down in Cyfair School District in Houston, which is one of, it has a reputation for being one of the worst school districts. That's where Asher Brown went. But this one kid last year, he was on a school bus, and he said to the school bus driver, please don't make me get off here. And the school bus driver said, this is your stop, you have to get off. And seven other kids got off with him. They were beating him up, and a school bus just drove off. Fortunately, a homeowner in the area saw what was going on right outside his house, walked outside with a gun, and had he not shot it at them, or in the air, not at them, to disperse the group, that kid would have been killed.
Yeah. That's the scary thing, is that this bullying is not, it's not just name-calling and slurs, you know, that kids are facing. It can escalate so easily. And it would be a scary thing to be an LGBT kid in high school,
I think. And, you know, is today the day that, you know, someone tosses the F word at me? Mm-hmm. You know, the anti-gay F word, and it becomes something bigger.
You want to hear?
That's got to be frightening.
You want to hear a statistic on how many kids have heard that kind of, those kinds of words? According to GLSEN, they did a survey, and state by state survey in Texas, 98% of kids who identify as gay have heard that in school, directed at them. 98% of them.
Wow. It'll be interesting to see what you encounter at your summit.
Yeah, I'm very ecstatic. I cannot wait. Mm-hmm. It's a huge project.
Do you know how many are planning on coming right now? I just told you about one that I spoke to this week who was planning on coming. You didn't know about him.
You know, the Facebook event says 20 in about 20 yes and about 15 maybes, and I thought, you know, oh, we'll probably just get 30. You know, I probably won't get the word out too well. And now I keep hearing people coming back telling me, oh, there's this GSA, or there's this, you know, there's the League of GSAs now, and which is just a multitude of GSAs that have come together already, kind of creating the same idea. And I think I might have lost count on how many are coming. So.
Well, and, you know, the GLPT community, as so many other communities, are just wonderful at RSVPing, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. Oh, okay, Tony, can we?
There's probably a whole group out there that will never click the button or send you an email.
Okay, Patty, do you want to guess? At the last count, which is in 2009, Glisson gave me the number yesterday of the number of GSAs in Texas. How many do you think there are?
In Texas? The whole state.
Whole state.
50.
You know. I told you. So I'm not asking Giancarlo. There are actually 350.
Really?
As of 2 years ago.
I'm excited to hear that.
As of 2 years ago. Now, that's very low compared to, say, California or New York.
We have like 28 million people.
25 million people here in Texas. It's not that many, really, because it's not a GSA per school district. It's per school. And Giancarlo, you went to school in Plano. There are three senior highs. There are more than that, 10th grade high schools. And each of those could have a GSA. But really, in Plano, it's only what?
We've had about one GSA, maybe two, and the one GSA was at Plano Senior High, and I think there's a second one somewhere out and about, but it was always fluctuating from, you know, being active and inactive. So.
Now, you had an interesting story when you were in high school in Plano. You were at Vines for 9th and 10th, or for 10th grade.
Yeah.
And you wanted to start a GSA.
Oh, yes. It was, maybe it was a little my fault because it was somewhere near the end. But nonetheless, I was going to attend school there, or I wasn't going to attend school there, but I would have friends who would be attending school there the next year because our high schools are separated by two grades. And I had to go out and get a petition of 100 signatures in order to create my GSA. And at the time, I wasn't really aware of what my rights were or any of that. So I just wanted to create a safe space. That's all I knew at the time. And so I went ahead and got 100 signatures, students and teachers, and they weren't all there. I was actually, I think there were more, you know, students who identified as straight signing that petition than there were students identifying as gay. And I got the signatures, and I went back to the principal, not the dean. The dean was super nice, but the principal, oh, she's just wasn't all too excited.
Does every group have to get 100?
No.
So she just singled you out, said, yes, you have to get 100 signatures. Yes. And then
we got signatures, and then she's like, oh, it's too late. It's the end of the year. Try again next year. I was like, I'm not going to be here next year.
Yeah, but first, it's, okay, we'd love you to form a GSA, but you need to find an advisor. And finding an advisor wasn't easy, was it?
I had not found an advisor yet, actually, but I had to get the signatures first, and then I was going to look for the advisor, because I didn't even know if I could create the GSA to mm-hmm. begin with. But I'm sure finding an advisor would not have been easy at all, because that would have singled out the teacher.
Right.
By everybody else.
In a school where you have a principal that the teacher knows doesn't really want one of these in the school, but any GSA has to have some kind of faculty advisor. Down in Flower Bluff, which is a town just outside of Corpus Christi, the principal did not want a GSA, threatened to cancel all extracurricular activities rather than have a GSA in that school. Now, the GSA had basically formed. You had the kids, you had the advisor, they were all set to go. Principal said no. Big protests outside the school. And so what the principal did was the advisor withdrew, obviously. Are you going to be the teacher who's going to stick your neck out and put your job on the line for this? And so the principal decided that she would monitor the situation herself.
Really?
You know, and monitor the situation, not be the advisor. So what
I want to go back to something here. Now, nobody else has to get 100 signatures. Is this? Did you discover this after you'd gotten them, that nobody else has to do this?
Yeah, I didn't really find out until I came to YFT. I did not find out.
Wow.
At all. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing, because when the National Coming Out Project was doing that signature ad in the Dallas Morning News, mm-hmm. One of the years that I was co-chairing, we had been to that time having to submit reams, boxes and boxes and boxes of signature pages, where in affidavits, they were actual affidavits, sworn affidavits, of each person who was putting their name in the signature ad. There were hundreds and hundreds of people, and I said, well, what other groups are doing this? And they said, well, you know, I'm like, whoever's doing a signature ad, do they have to do this too? No. Well, if we're the only ones, we're not doing it anymore. So we gave one affidavit with the print-ready art, and that was over with. Mm-hmm. We were no more piles of paper. So sometimes, you know, it happens to outside schools too.
Great.
And it's discrimination.
Of course it's discrimination. Did they give you a reason why you needed them?
It's only because it had been done that way for, you know.
And why was
years.
It done that way originally?
Oh, pure discrimination.
Okay.
Pure discrimination.
You know, it was discrimination. Was the Morning News worried that they were going to be sued because they didn't really know you and thought that maybe you were making up names that were going to...
I think that's what they thought, and that, you know, they wanted, like, a real person to represent each name, and that was genuinely who they are, mm-hmm. and, you know, all of that. But, you know, I mean, we had a couple of calls, you know, every year when the ad came out, because a lot of people, a lot of names are very common,
mm-hmm.
and there's more than one, and I didn't put my name in. No, that was somebody else,
mm-hmm.
you know, but my favorite part of that was... Which ones are the gay people?
Right.
Well, you can't tell, can you? That may be true for GSAs, too. You know, did the gay people wear something special so we can see who they are?
No.
You know, I mean, it's a question a lot of people ask. And I think that's great that you have a lot of straight response, perhaps even bigger than gay response.
In the GSAs and over at Youth First Texas, because they're really very similar types of things, aren't they? You get a number of straight kids that come.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Why do they come?
You know, you have to ask yourself that question when you work there as a volunteer or even maybe just as a youth, because it really doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, I believe that it's because they're comfortable. They're absolutely comfortable. You know, it doesn't, because sexuality really isn't an issue. It's not. It's not
what you're talking about most of the time.
Right. It's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about most of the time is our everyday lives. You know, who did you meet? What girl are you dating? What boy are you dating? You know, who are you talking to now? You know, who are you friends with? Or what are you doing? You know, what extracurricular? I mean, it's everyday life conversations. We're not doing anything. You know, we're not trying to persuade anyone to be gay, straight, or whatever. We're not, you know, brainwashing anyone. We're not doing anything out of the ordinary. We're just going to a place where we can feel comfortable talking about our everyday lives. We're not going to be judged or persecuted for anything.
When I've been over at Youth First Texas, I've seen them doing some activities that I know these would shock, like Reverend Jeffers at First Baptist Church, but I've seen kids going there and doing their homework.
Oh no.
Yeah, I've seen kids there. Last week I was over there and there was a group that was dancing, there was a group that was sitting talking, and there were others that were using computers. It's shocking what they were doing. Just shocking. It's not like these groups are all about sex, because you know what? Actually, even on this show, we've been on for 28 years. How much do we talk about sex? We're not.
Not a lot,
no,
actually.
No.
Blissfully.
With the GSAs, I want to get back to the straight kids that belong. Are a lot of these kids just other kids who, for whatever reason, don't fit in or don't feel comfortable with something in general?
You know, I think that would be more like 75-25. I think 75% of the kids that identify as straight or might be considered odd in one way or another. And then the other 25% are just, you know, kids that within the school would be considered, you know, normal, if you will. And but other than that, there's really, I really don't see, you know. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I find in talking to young people in schools, and the straight people who are very supportive of LGBT people, you know, if you take just the LGBT people, we're a very small group compared to the rest of the population. But a lot of people have a brother, a sister, a mom, a dad, a cousin, an aunt, an uncle, a neighbor, somebody in their lives they care about who is LGBT. And so they're just there supporting because that's normal for them to be supportive of people around them and others who would just say, this is the right thing to do.
Right. And I'd actually like to say something to that because I have a lot of friends. And I actually have more straight friends than I do gay friends, and I have probably more lesbian friends than I do gay friends. But most of my straight friends, a lot of them do have an uncle, an aunt, a cousin, some family relative who is gay, or they know someone who's gay that's close to them. And, you know, going back to that 75-25% thing that I mentioned, the reason why I think the 75% they're considered a little bit more odd is because they do have that relative, and they're just more comfortable expressing that out in public, and because they simply just don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't, and that other 25%, maybe they're not as comfortable. They just don't share, or they're not thinking about it. It is what it is. It's not like something that you have to go out and voice or proclaim to the entire world. Because again, no one really cares what your sexuality is because it's hard to tell to begin with. I mean, I think
another reason that a number of straight kids go is they have a friend who's gay, and I think it's a straight one encouraging the gay one to go to the GSA or to Youth First Texas, and they're saying, well, I'll go along with you. Sure, I'll go. Why wouldn't they go? You know, it's just a group. I think there's another reason that a number of gay people or a number of straight kids just feel comfortable at a place like Youth First Texas. Where is there a straight group that's anything like this other than a church group? And I'm not criticizing the church group, but if you're not active with your church group, where else are you going to go as kids to a place?
And only some kids want to go play chess together after school, you know. so you know, you got to have a niche for everybody.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just a place for kids to get together, and I think that's what a lot of the GSAs actually provide—just a place for kids to get together, to talk, to form friendships, and get some good support. We're talking to Giancarlo Masi. He is putting together a summit of GSAs, Gay Straight Alliances. It's going to be on Saturday, February 4th, mm-hmm. 4th, from 10 to 2 p.m. at Youth First Texas, which is located on Harry Hines Boulevard. If you belong to a GSA, if you go to a school where they don't have a GSA and you would like to learn how to form one and talk to other people who have formed them, this would be a great opportunity. Is there any cost to going?
No, absolutely not.
No cost. You can just go to the Youth First Texas page. It's youthfirst.com?
Youthfirsttexas.org.
Youthfirsttexas.org. And you can just let them know. The only reason to let them know ahead of time is because you want to make sure you have enough coffee and enough food.
Yes, please.
Which is all being donated.
And enough chairs.
And enough chairs. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here with Patty Fink. We'll be back more with Giancarlo right after this.
KNON thanks Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com.
I started going cold turkey. Well, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it from myself, so I won't be tempted.
I used to do it all the time. I stopped by locking it in my glove compartment.
My friend used to do it way too much. Now I turn it off when we're in the car.
My solution is simple.
I just don't do it.
There are lots of ways to stop yourself and others from texting and driving. How will you stop? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org, brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Red Hot and Blue presents the 13th annual KNON Blues Festival this Saturday and Sunday at Port Davis Pub. This is KNON's own Greg A. Smith, here to tell you all about it. Get your tickets for a great show with Jim Sula and Monkey B, James Butler All-Star Blues Review with myself, Greg A. Smith, Ernie Johnson and Cookie McGee, Smoking Joe Kubek with Bernard King, Andrew Jr. Boy Jones featuring Kerry Lee Pye, Pat Boyack and those pesky Javelinas, Mr. Houston and the Icebreakers, KNON's Blues Band with J-Mac and Sonny Boy Mark, with special guests Zach Harmon, Hass Brown, Aaron Burton Trio featuring Stompin' Bill Johnson, Leo Hall and the Texas Blues Machine, Johnny Red and the Roosters, Doro Danny Hill, Larry Lampkin, and Leno and Company. Tickets are only $10 and available now at KNON.org. Bill's Records, Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, and all the Red Hot and Blue locations.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink. And our guest today is Giancarlo Massi. He is planning a summit of GSAs here in Dallas on February 4th. And a GSA is a Gay-Straight Alliance. Mostly they're in high school. Some of the colleges have gay-straight alliances, too, don't they?
Yes.
Are they going to be coming, too, from the colleges?
Yes, actually. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Some of the interns doing the workshops for the GSA Summit are from UNT.
Oh, very good.
Excellent. Well, so this is going to be an opportunity, then, for doing what's known as best practices, too. So if somebody's already done something, or a bunch of groups have already done something, and they can toss around what worked, what didn't work, how they'd do it again if they were going to do it, and you can write all that down and share it, that would be awesome stuff.
Yeah, well, there's no point in reinventing the wheel.
Exactly. Especially for a small GSA getting started, they can kind of look to this group for some guidance about the smart way to do it, mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, we were talking about problems that some schools have had in forming these GSAs. I was talking to one student. He's up at Greenhill School. And, I said, was there any opposition? And he said, no, we just had to find a faculty advisor. So we found two. And the administration said to us, okay, when do you want to meet and what room do you want? And he said it was that difficult to form. And he said normally about 50 or 60 students show up. Now, Greenhill School is a private school, about 440, 450 students in the high school. About 50 or 60 of them show up each week for the GSA
wow.
meeting. And that doesn't mean it's always the same kids.
That's amazing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. What an exciting thing. I mean, that's really awesome.
Yeah.
Down at Booker T, which is the school for the performing arts, they have about 50 members and much bigger school. And I asked, well, why at Booker T do you have a much smaller GSA? And the answer was really, at our school, people don't even think they need a GSA.
That's a cool group. I visited with that group.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Uh-huh. Although a good group will show up for a good meeting where you spoke along with Cece and... for something like that, they'll show up. Doesn't mean they're members of the GSA. Giancarlo, what I want to talk about is what led up to your really feeling that you needed a GSA, because you could have used some support of some sort from a teacher, from a somebody, because you weren't getting it at home. As a kid, you were abused. You really don't know your father. You've lived a number of different places, right?
Right.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I came out somewhere in the middle of my freshman year in high school. I was at Jasper High School at the time. And when I came out, I lost just about every guy friend I had, with the exception of one. And he's really dear to me, and we're still friends today. And then I had about 3 or 4 girls that actually liked me. And then from there on, you know, I just wasn't necessarily the most popular kid. And somehow everyone knew the gay kid, but no one really knew my name or my last name or anything else of me but the fact that I was gay. And that was really tough. And I had some interesting experiences. That summer, I finally met YFT the summer after. But before I met YFT, I remember in particular I was going to summer school because I wanted to get ahead of my classes. So my senior year, all I had to do was take electives because I didn't want to do anything my senior year. There was a particular group from the West High School, the Plano West High School, and they were just picking on me on the summer school bus every day. And one particular day, they decided to throw like items at me, and it was, you know, water bottles and some tape roller, plastic roll that holds the tape. And I mean, that one kind of hurt. And I just kept passing it back to them, which was really stupid. But I all I knew was in the back of my head that there was a camera on this bus, and that if I needed to do anything, I would, and I should have, and I didn't. And I think it was because I just was too scared. I was too scared. I didn't have enough support because it's just me, three girls, and that's it. That was all my friends for the summer school. And even if it was caught on camera, and even if I told the bus driver, I still didn't feel comfortable enough to go and say, hey.
The bus driver was on the bus, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was okay. Driving the entire time, and surprised he didn't even just stop the bus, because when we're being too loud and obnoxious, he'll stop the entire bus and tell us to shut up. But this time, even though he saw through his little window, because he can see everything, he can see the entire bus, he did not stop. And wow. I was just completely appalled. But mm-hmm. I was
and
just
I see this happened even, repeatedly.
Oh, yeah, it happened every day, pretty much. They picked on me one way or the other. And then finally on the last day, they're like, oh, hey, you know, do you want to take a picture with us? You know, and I was like, why? Maybe. I mean, you are kind of cute, but why? Like, I mean, I was just
I'm thinking
stupid.
Evidence photo.
But, right, exactly. Evidence photo of them beating me up, you mean, because that's what they wanted. And my friends, the three girls, they said, no, what are you doing, Giancarlo? Why are you being so stupid? Like, don't be naive. You know why they want to take you to the back of school and take a picture with you. Come on. You know, get your head started on. And I was like, oh, my God. What am I doing? Like, how naive can I be? And I didn't, you know, luckily, mm-hmm. good. I was a smart kid. Mm-hmm. And finally, I met Youth First Texas. And, you know, then there was my sophomore year with, I wasn't too full into Youth First Texas at the time because I just met, and it was the one in Collin County. It was a chapter up there. And I could only go so often because, you know, I didn't have a bike or a car, and my mother wasn't supportive. So I had to walk there or ride my bike, mm-hmm. or if I had a bike. And so I could go every once in a while, but the incident at Vines really compelled me to. And by that time, I had met other youth my age who wanted a GSA as well, and they wanted a safe space, and they supported me. So
let's go back.
A little more power in numbers for sure.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Let's go back before that. You were doing cutting.
Right.
Why?
I had fallen in love with a boy from my church. I was still very Baptist, and I fell in love with him deeply. And we had been dating, if you will, in the background for about 8 months, and I was living with him for about 8 months because my mother and I were doing so well financially, and she told me she had quit her jobs because I had depressed her for being gay, and so she decided to give up on life.
It's a good excuse.
Oh, man.
Yes, right. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. And so I finally moved out of their home for some unfortunate reasons, and I couldn't deal with the fact that I loved him and I was Christian. I believed to my heart that the only way to have redemption with God was to die, to sacrifice myself for him, to commit suicide. That was the number one way I felt I could actually get back in God's favor for, you know, having...
Was to kill yourself.
To kill myself for being gay. And because it was a sin. So, you know, I couldn't express those emotions. I couldn't open up about that. I wasn't out or anything to any of my... Just my friends, anyone else. And so, I cut because it was easier to feel.
And when you're saying cutting, you're talking about taking a knife or a razor blade.
Anything. Oh, my gosh.
And cutting on your arm.
Yeah, I mean, this one time, I used a piece of string in order to reopen a wound because I just couldn't, I just kind of, like, sort it in back and forth, piece of string, because I didn't have any knives on me at the time, and I just couldn't take it. It's easier to feel physical pain that'll go away eventually than feeling an emotional pain that isn't going to go away. And
it's a common response to, you know, abusive, boxed-in situations. You know, lots of girls who are anorexic growing up turn to cutting as a way of relief. But, you know, I grew up a Southern Baptist as well. I know that environment.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's real tough. And I went to Baylor.
So, yeah, it's I was like, oh, my dad went to Baylor too.
That's a really tough environment to try to deal with that conflict, being told that, you know, you're going to go to hell, basically.
So, Patty, you ended up at Baylor, but Giancarlo, you ended up in an institution.
Right.
Okay, tell us what happened.
The cutting got a little out of... it just got a little too much. And the cutting eventually became suicide attempts.
Because originally, it wasn't really suicide attempts, it was more...
It was a release. It was more like an addiction. It's like, you know, instead of getting my fix of drug or alcohol or whatever, I was getting my fix of cutting. And I wasn't out, and me and my friend weren't out yet, and his mother was still very close to me and was trying to help me as much as she could. And I really felt like I was going to go over it. Like, I really did. I really, really felt it. And I think I was still straight in my head, if you will. I still was coherent enough to understand what I was doing was wrong. So I called her, and then she came and picked me up that one time, and she told me that she had to take me to a hospital, and she didn't know where to take me. She had called cops and whatnot and whatever, and took me to hospital. And so the first time I went to Timberlawn, and that was an interesting experience. I don't really remember much of it because I was just drugged up on everything. And it must be like procedure to drug newcomers with everything you can. I don't know, but it was not fun. And then they released me within about a week, and I went home, and I was on medications. And
by home, with your mother?
My mother, back to my mother. And things just got heavy again, and I still wasn't out. I wasn't coming out. I wouldn't tell anybody. I started drinking at this point, and then...
How old were you?
15, 16?
Wow.
Like something like that. It was just right after my freshman year. Yeah. So, I then, you know, attempted suicide again, went back, and this time I went to Green Oaks, and the cops were called, and a particular cop took me, and then it was a week, I was released, came back home, tried again a third time, and, you know, released, and I started doing some drugs here and there, and was, you know, went back again a fourth time and then released. And then the fifth time, I really, you know, that was it. I was done. I was done going back in and out. I had already lost an entire year of my life. Basically, it was near the end of the year, and I didn't remember much of that year. I don't still to today. But I just felt I couldn't anymore. I just felt like if I took one more breath, I was just done. And so I decided to lock myself in the restroom. I didn't tell anyone. I was very quiet. Didn't wake my mother up. Didn't call anyone. And I just started hacking away. And my mother must have felt something. I don't know. But she woke up, and she just knocked on the bathroom door. And I was already in, you know, my own pool of blood. And she didn't realize that until she looked underneath the door. And she, you know, screamed and called 911. But, you know, I had already done some pretty good damage. And another particular cop came by, and... You know, he's like, I know why you're doing this. You know, I need to tell you something before you do anything out of your mind. It's okay. It's okay. You're going to be fine, and you're not alone. This is what he said to me. And I told him, yes, I am, because you're just one person. And then that's just me. That's not enough. And so at that point, there was like three or four cops outside, you know, the bathroom door. And it's a small apartment. And, you know, they broke the door down, and they had to, you know, handcuff me and everything, because I was not Giancarlo. Mm-hmm. I was somewhere else.
Wow.
So it was an interesting story. And that was the fifth time that I was sent to Green Oaks again.
But the police officer gave you a card.
Yes, he gave me a card at the hospital. He said...
Because he accompanied you to the hospital.
Right, he accompanied me to the hospital. He drove me there because he figured me out. And he gave me a huge grin. He's like, I think I know what the problem here is. And I smiled back at him and gave him a big grin as well. I was like, you're like me, aren't you? He's like, I can't say anything else. Just trust me. Just go to this place. And he put the card in my jeans. And, you know, he took me to Green Oaks. And
And the card was for Youth First
Texas. Mm-hmm. The card was Youth First Texas.
Oh, that's great.
Right, and I had to give all my close-ups, and so they gave it to my mother, and finally I was institutionalized for a week, and my mother was like, oh, I'm not coming to get you anymore. I'm done. You can stay there. And I was like, wait, what? You know, I freaked out. I didn't know what she meant by that.
Because you were supposed to go in for a week.
I was supposed to go in for a week. She's like, I'm absolutely done. You're sick. You're absolutely sick. You're not right in your head, and you need medical treatment. And I was like, I'm sick? What does sick mean? What do I have? And, you know, I had come out by then. The fifth time I came out, I finally told my therapist, and my therapist told my psychiatrist, and my psychiatrist told everyone. And my therapist told me that it was all under confidentiality. Sorry, I can't pronounce certain words. and so I opened up, and little did I know that, you know, within days, they had told my church and my family, my friends, and
the hospital did.
They told everyone, and I did not know anything. And everyone knew, and I freaked out because everyone was hearing what the hospital was saying, but they weren't hearing what I was saying. I had no voice in this whatsoever. And all I could think of, oh my God, my life is ruined. My life is absolutely ruined. Now, I thought I was alone, but now I'm really going to be alone and locked away here. And of course, you know, the hospital's like, okay, no, you can't stay here. It's only 1 week. So we're going to have to figure something out. And we can't release you because you're underage. And, you know, some of the nurses were suggesting, you know, get a CPS caseworker, you know, get a CPS, get a CPS caseworker, get a CPS caseworker. And I couldn't do it because I knew what that meant. You know, that meant a lawsuit and that meant scary things. And, you know, I was already in a scary spot to begin with. I didn't want to deal with any of it anymore. And
you were only 15.
I was, yeah, somewhere around there.
Maybe 16.
Maybe 16, yeah. And, well, probably by then 16, because it was near the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, when I was told that I was going to be sent to some program, which is some other hospital, where I was going to be evaluated every 8 months on my character, my personality, and if I was still sick or gay, if you will, then another 8 months would be added on.
So not only did this psychiatrist break confidentiality...
And that's just, like, inviolate. I mean...
And she'd lose her license for that.
Wow.
She also recommended reparative therapy, which is not an approved therapy that any medical organization approves of. But she was recommending that he go to reparative therapy and using that as a treatment... And this is a psychiatrist who still has her license, as far as we know, and is working at Green Oaks.
And still practicing.
And still practicing.
That's stunning.
It's dangerous, endangering lives, almost cost Giancarlo his life, and it's inexcusable. It's inexcusable. This is somebody, I mean, I don't know if it's within statute of limitations. You have such a lawsuit against these people. And it's just several years ago, so who knows? But I don't know what the laws are as far as once you become an adult, can you then turn around for something that happened several years ago? You have such a lawsuit against these people. And the reason to do it wouldn't be just for yourself. It would be to stop her from harming other people, too.
Right. I understand that. I do find it a little difficult to go back during that time, though.
Right. We need to take a break.
What an encounter, though. That's amazing.
It is.
I'm so happy that you're here.
Thank you.
And it did get better, didn't it?
It did get better. Absolutely.
You know, that's the point of that message, because so many people do go through this when they're kids for no reason. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with... the on time and the early Patty Fink.
Freaking David out.
Not the late Patty Fink. We're talking to Giancarlo Masi, who is joking about you being the late Patty Fink, and we're talking about suicide attempts today. But bad taste is something that we're all about here sometimes.
And Giancarlo and I are both alive.
Yes, you are.
And we're not the late anybody.
And you are. We'll talk a little bit more about, because he has, as bad as your story is, it has a good ending. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-CAN-ON-AUTO or donate online at canon.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-CAN-ON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-CAN-ON-AUTO.
Thursday nights are back in Dallas with the all-new Thursday Night Crunk Spot Club Mr. Biggs. Energy Promotions is proud to present the One World Party at Club Mr. Biggs every single Thursday. DJ Steez and DJ Magnum in the mix, hosted by Eddie G and Alex Botta. Gay, straight, lesbian, bi, everyone together partying Thursday night at Club Mr. Biggs.
10333 Technology Boulevard, Dallas. Doors open at 10 p.m.
For details, 214-514-6596. Facebook keyword, Eddie G Promotions. Thursday night, Mr. Biggs, keeping it live.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Tappert, and I'm here with Patty Fink, and we're talking to John Carlo Amasi. He's putting together a summit of gay straight alliances. It'll take place at Youth First Texas, which is over on Harry Hines Boulevard, on February 4th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. If you're interested in attending, taking part, if you're a student, either college or high school student, you'd like to take part in this, whether or not your school has a GSA. Go to the Youth First Texas website, which is youthfirsttexas.org. Get the information, register, no cost, but they need to know how many people are coming just so they can plan for how many people are coming.
And you've got folks coming from East Texas and, you know, down the 35 corridor and west into Fort Worth and every part in between and up to Denton. That's a lot of big and little towns.
I am trying my hardest to make sure that does happen. Yes. It's exciting. And I really hope to create a well-established GSA network in North Texas and make sure that these GSAs are not just prospering, but that they're being maintained. Because, you know, sometimes things happen and, you know, GSAs go down under and they don't have the support or someone to keep them alive because, you know, sometimes it kids have their issues. But.
What we oftentimes see, and we've seen this several times in Collin County, like in the junior colleges and and various organizations in Dallas and around the area, is that, and particularly in the GSA, it's kind of built in that somebody's gung-ho and very active and organized and you know, there's lots of fruit to the work, and, you know, they graduate, and they leave, and nobody that strong and organized and whatever comes behind them, and so it all kind of falls apart. And then another year, somebody else steps up, and it starts all over again from scratch, you know, and, right. and keeps it going, and then they graduate. And it's the cycle. It's kind of built in, I guess, with the...
And that's where a good advisor steps in. An advisor can keep that going. So it's
absolutely.
It's not just to have the advisor just because the administration's requiring it. The advisor, if they're sold on this group, will keep it going. You know, some years more students, some years fewer.
I'd like to say something on that because the advisor at my plan senior high school for my senior, he was really good. He was really good. What I didn't like about it is that he wasn't really involved. He was just like, oh, I just let the kids do whatever they want. And I'm like, no. See, you're the advisor. That word has a definition. Please look it up. And I really recommend that all advisors who are, you know, sponsoring these GSAs or supporting them, you know, teachers, counselors, anyone, in particular counselors should be in the forefront of this, to get in the know and know what's happening and make sure that these GSAs are, you know, are being maintained, or at least that someone is. And, you know, that might bring up some question from the others, you know, other recreation or other groups.
One of the reasons you wanted a GSA and worked so hard at Vines to create one, even though your principal put every roadblock in the way for you, was because of your experience at home that led you to do some cutting and got you institutionalized. And let's get the end of your story, okay. Because you were there, your mother refused to pick you up, and you ended up being in this one-week program for 4 weeks.
Oh, a month or two, actually.
Or even longer. How did you finally get out? Because you can't just, you're 16 years old, you can't just walk out of one of these places.
Well, I listened to the nurses, and I got a CPS caseworker. I spent one random day, I was just sitting in the corner, I had a meltdown, and I was tranquilized a couple of times and strapped up and thrown in a room, and so I had quite a few hours of thinking. And I, you know, just came to realize that there wasn't going to be a white knight in shiny armor to come rescue me, and if there was one, that would be me. And so I was like, you know, go ahead, get me a CPS caseworker. I talked to her, told her my entire story from beginning to end, and I had her in tears by the end of the story, but I was happy because I finally took control of my life, and she's like, I'll do whatever it takes to get you out of here. And so she called up the church, and she called up my mother, and she's like, I'm going to file a lawsuit against you because this is neglection. You're neglecting your child. You've neglected him and left him here, and by law, you have to take him out. You've already surpassed the time limit that he's allowed to stay here, and you're supposed to be taking care of him. And the church didn't want a lawsuit. They didn't want to get involved anymore. They were tired. They didn't care. And so they encouraged one of the church members, who's a really good friend of ours, still to today, she's a very good friend of ours, and she went up to my mother and she said, what are you doing? Number one thing God teaches about is to love. And this is your child. And number one thing as a mother is to love your child. What are you doing? So she grabbed my mother pretty much by the wrist and drove her down to the hospital, and she's like, you know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to take you out of here, but I have my hands tied, so I will. And I was like, okay, I don't care. You've lost all my respect. My mother and I were really close. We were best friends. Very close.
But being gay split up that relationship?
Yeah. She would tell me all the time as I was growing up, you know, nothing can break a mother's love for their child. And
But hate can.
Right.
Hate for your child can.
and I do have to give her credit, though, real quick, because she came around. She did come around. She and I, we don't have the best of relationships because it's too far gone, it's too hurt, but she came around, and we talk. You know, we're good, and she's cool with it, and some other things. But during that time, it was really hard on me. And so I went back to the house, and I had a new purpose. I had a new life, and I had a new mission. And my new mission was to make myself feel better, get better, because only I had control of that. And then I got involved with YFT in Collin County. I met a boy online. Luckily, he wasn't a serial killer or rapist. And
right.
Good
thing.
He too had a YFT card. And he's like, oh, I have this card. I was going to go there. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, I was given this card by a cop. And, you know, my mother found it. And, you know, someone must have looked it up or something. She said, this card, this place wasn't for me. And threw it away. And, I never could find it. And she's like, oh, great. Well, let's go together. So we did. And, you know, here I am today.
Awesome.
And you ended up moving out of the house with her, from her.
Well, we were homeless for a while, and we kept jumping from house to house, and friends kept supporting me. They didn't necessarily want to support my mother because, you know, they knew, or anyone, you know, any other aspect that didn't support me, they didn't want to support it, but, you know, they knew that I couldn't do much without my mother, so they did. And finally, we were at the last house that we were babysitting from some friends that were moving to Austin, and she finally sold the house. She's like, I'm sorry, this is all I can do, you know, and my mother and I were like, where are we going to go? And I looked her in the eye, and I was like, I'll tell you where we're going to go. You're going to go your own way. I'm going to go my own way, and that's it. She's like, well, what are you going to do? And I told her, I'm going to go to a homeless shelter, I'm going to get myself a job, I'm going to buy myself a plane ticket, and I'm leaving this country because I'm done. And she's like, how are you going to do that? I was like, don't worry about it.
Said, you know. But that's not what happened. At Youth First Texas, you met somebody.
Yes. I had been volunteering heavily, my senior year. Things were still tough at home. You know, I had already been out of the hospital for a year or two, maybe less. And I was, you know, in varsity choir. I was very active in my school. I was very popular, if you will. I knew a lot of the kids, had a lot of support. I'd built a huge support network for myself. Unfortunately, I tried to share it with others, but, you know, it was hard to get other kids to come out of my school.
Right.
I managed to turn a few. But being very involved with Youth for Sex is about a year or two, maybe going on three, and I was singing with Dallas Pump at the time. I had met Jonathan Palin and singing with the Turtle Creek Corral. I was very active in anything, everything that I could get my hands up. There wasn't a day I didn't want to spend volunteering or doing something because I couldn't live at home. So right. I lived outside in the real world, you know, working my butt off or something worth meaning. And I met the treasurer there, and he was giving me rides because I was running out of funds or I was too busy to be going back and forth from Plano and Dallas by DART. It just got too overwhelming, so he was giving me rides, and it was easy on me. And one day I just came up to him and I was like, so I won't need a ride anymore. He's like, why? And I told him what was going on and the move and tickets and the homeless shelter. He's like, whoa, before you throw your life away, let me talk to my husband real quick. And then they talk to the board of directors, and you know, they're like, you know, this in this situation, you know, I think you can decide what you choose to do. And you know, they took me into their home, and we grew as a family. We really did. And they,
oh, awesome.
Yeah, I have like two gay dads now, and since I'm adopted, and I've met their entire families, and you know, I have grandparents now, and I absolutely love them. And you know, we're just like any other family. You know, we fight, argue, we get mad at each other for really long times, but in the end, I think we know we still love each other. I know I love them a lot,
and you're in touch with your mother now.
Oh yeah, I'm in touch with my mother, and we're really close. For my graduation ceremony, the day before, she just kind of like came to the house and she was crying, and she started pouring out in tears, running. She's like, I don't know why you hate me so much. And I was like, let me tell you why I hate you so much, because obviously you've been wanting to ask this question for a while. You ditched out on me. You said you were my best friend, and you loved me, and you know, mother's love cannot be broken by anything. And yet, you know, me being gay somehow managed to break that. Like, after how many years of loving me and telling me you adore me, I mean, come on, like, you know, how long is it going to take you to get a clue? You know? And she's like, I just didn't know, I didn't understand, but now I do. I'm so sorry. What can I do to make it up? And I was like, oh, mom. And you know, we were just crying, and it was great. It was very blissful. It was great.
But you live with your two gay dads.
So I live with my two gay dads,
and you're still with them, and
nice in touch with my mom. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I stay active.
So good, wow. Good ending. And a lot of this, had he gotten more support in school, and we're not talking about expensive curriculum, we're talking about a principal that didn't put every roadblock in the way for a few kids who wanted to meet. They needed a classroom after school. You know, big deal.
Right? We're talking about this in the break, that what really disturbs me about this whole cycle, because Giancarlo, you ran into all of this and people telling you were sick and you know, disruptions in your life, and you began to hate yourself, and you had conflict with your religion and your mother, and all of this is because the outside world doesn't accept you as a gay person. And I think it's just crazy when we talk about bullying policies in schools, and even with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, where the premise of it all was, oh, well, this is all in place to protect gay people. Well, no. That's insane, because the logic is just so circularly twisted, to say, well, if you stay quiet about who you are, then you won't get beaten up or killed. I'm like, no, that's not the problem here. The thing that has to change is the violence and the disrespect and the harassment. That has to stop.
You know, and the kids that he was talking about on the bus, he was saying that was West Plano. That's the expensive part of Plano. Plano itself is supposed to be this nice, big, wealthy, comfortable suburb, and the kids he was talking about were from the wealthy part of the wealthy suburb. And I'm not putting Plano down at all, I'm just saying you expect this, you know, and you always hear, oh yeah, Oak Cliff or whatever, you know, my part of town, but it's everywhere. It really is everywhere.
Well, you may recall, this is a side note here, but in the 80s, the late 80s, Plano had the highest suicide rate, teen suicide rate in the country.
It also had the highest drug rate.
Yeah.
Or I don't know how you measure that, but there was an extremely high rate of drug usage at Plano High School. Right. Point being here, we're not picking on Plano. Giancarlo, you happen to be from Plano. What we're doing is we're saying, it happens. It happens everywhere.
It happens in small towns. It happens in big, large cities. Mm-hmm. You know, I would hope that there's a GSA effort at every high school, in towns large and small.
And that's what you said is your goal.
Yes, that is my goal. That is my big, giant goal. My Texas-sized goal.
Because?
Because it gets better.
And because this is one way for every kid to feel that.
Absolutely.
To not feel like they're alone. I mean, kids like Asher Brown, when he killed himself, he was at his wit's end. He didn't know what else to do. He had nobody else to turn to. I mean, and his parents were accepting his parents. And it's just, no matter what they did in school, he was just beaten up, thrown down the stairs. I mean, that's what happened the last time before he killed himself. Thrown down the stairs, he picked himself up, brushed himself off, and some more kids came by and threw him down the next flight of stairs.
And it's tough. I mean, that's a really difficult age to take it all on and mm-hmm. be so alone
yeah.
in handling it. So this is great. This
Giancarlo, thank you so much for being with us.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
You.
And
go,
February 4th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
YouthFirstTexas.org. Let them know that you want to come. Anybody is welcome, or students. Are you inviting teachers, actually?
It's open to the public.
Okay, so anybody who's interested in helping, who wants to learn about GSAs, who wants to help form one, whatever.
And real quick, this is a little cheesy, but that cop turned out to be a volunteer from Youth First Texas, and we got reunited.
Awesome.
And we were crying. But it was great.
That's great.
It was great.
Yeah. So he got to see it got better for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. He was so proud. All right.
And we
come full circle. That's great.
We'll be back next week. Is next week the first? Yes. So it's Pledge Drive next week. Candy Markham is our guest.
Yes. Very exciting.
We'll see you next week.